here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Greg Pappas on the board, as we do every Thursday. SP Futures up 31, NASDAQ Futures up 93. That's after the amazing shellacking the market took yesterday. I don't know about that, necessarily. What do you think? We have Mr. Lou? Do we have Professor Lou or not?
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
Good.
Were you happy?
What's going on?
Nothing. The market is trying to make some sort of a bounce here, but yesterday was not so hot, as they say. It's the biggest move we've had down in a long time.
The market's reflecting, I think, the turmoil that the Trump people are. Well, let me back up. I shouldn't say the market's reflecting what the Trump people are doing. Who's the president?
Well, I mean, right now he's doing his best to take control, which, you know, there's not much time, so it pretty much is in 3 or 4 weeks.
Who's the president?
Right now?
Yep.
The lamest duck that ever was.
There's a new story apparently out in the Wall Street Journal. I mean, it didn't take long. One of the questions that I asked earlier, probably a couple of years ago, was how long it would take after Biden left before we started seeing the stories about what his people were doing to hide from the American public just what a mental defective he was. And it didn't even take the end of his presidency to get those stories out. The Wall Street Journal is running a story this morning talking about anecdotes from his aides going back to 2019, talking about how his people worked to disguise the fact that he was greatly diminished mentally and physically, and was not, you know, compos mentis. So interesting storyline.
I would definitely agree. I get all.
What do you think ought to happen to those people, Tom?
Nothing happens to anybody.
To be fair, that's their job.
That is their job.
Their job, well, I would say no, it's not. Well, let me back up. That's a great line. It is their job. It's also illegal. So I think something's going to happen to them.
Are you going down to hell and grab Nancy Reagan and do the same thing to her?
Nancy, I don't think there was any indication that there was a cabal of people making decisions for Reagan.
He had lost it the last year or two.
No, I don't think so. Not to this extent. Trust me, if the press had been doing its job on Biden, I mean, they would have been all over it. There are allegations about Reagan, and people screamed about it for a while, and I know you hate the guy. But
no, I don't. Absolutely not. I hate the guy.
Bottom line is that this was a cabal of people operating for years and years and years. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to slight Jill, but I certainly would think that licensure questions ought to be an issue for any lawyer that was involved in that White House.
Well, I just got a...
As well as the medical people.
I get all this stuff from, like I said, Cord. And you know, those guys are on both sides. And one of the guys, I don't know, he claims to be a half-assed psychologist, or what he is. He claims that if you look at the age, and you look at what at Trump in the last 6 to 9 months, we're going through the same thing 2 years from now.
Yeah, we could. I would hope...
Hope not.
I would hope that... the Trump people are, and they may have planned for this. This may be why they picked Vance. I hope the Trump people are willing or able to convince him, if he gets to that stage, to step aside.
Well, that'll be a tough conversation with that guy's ego.
I think it's an impossible conversation with Biden.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's not just the individual. The whole team of people who have hitched their stars to his wagon.
Try every eldest son in the country tries to have that conversation with his dad about driving.
I know. It's hard. But that's why you're elected president. You're elected president because you can make the hard decisions.
Well, that's why they booted...
Unless you're Joe Biden.
That's why they booted what's-his-name and put Truman in there. They knew Roosevelt was going to last, right?
Roosevelt died.
I understand it. But...
But
I mean, when they knew he wasn't going to last, mentally, I think he was okay, but physically, he was a mess.
I have not seen anything historically that Truman's selection was based on an assumption that FDR was going to pass away in the job.
I got news for you. If you read Freedom from Fear, the quote from Truman was when he went, he didn't even know why he was being brought to the meeting. Is being selected as the new VP. And Roosevelt was in the room. When Truman walked out, I don't know if he said to his wife or somebody, he goes, they weren't interviewing me to be vice president, they were interviewing me to be president.
Hmm.
He was in that bad of shape.
Well, that's an interesting story. I don't know how that works, or how that worked. I'd have to read somewhere on
they
it.
Wanted,
but,
don't, no but part
bottom,
of Wendell
bottom
Wilkie
line is Truman was a surprise pick for vice president.
Exactly. Yeah.
He was a nobody.
Not really. He was deeply involved in all the financing for the war. Of all the senators, he probably knew more of the money and everything was going for the war. He was George Marshall's almost alter ego in Congress.
Well, he was a nobody in Democratic political circles, and had not really demonstrated any leadership capability. I highly doubt that's what they were interviewing him for more than I doubt.
Well, maybe they didn't think so, but he's a good old boy from Missouri. He looked at the man and goes, "He's not lasting 4 years."
The people who are making the decisions that I don't think were. Truman may have had that perspective.
They wanted no part of Wendell Wilkie as president.
I'm curious what your opinion. What do you think the mindset of Harris was when she got selected? Because it was apparent that Biden was
somewhat the same as a girl from Alaska.
Palin?
Yeah. Not entirely, but
Palin was 10 times the campaigner that Harris is.
Biden put himself in a corner. I'm gonna find a black woman. Well, that cuts out 90% of the people in the country.
That's right. That drove the train. I mean, but I'm just wondering if you look at
my VP is gonna be a lawyer from the Air Force Academy whose dad was an offensive line coach. Does that narrow it down?
No, it does. I mean, but that's right. It does. But I mean, I'm not asking about why she was picked and given this criteria. I'm asking what she would be thinking. And you know, would the expectation there be that I'm going to be president before this 4 years is up? Number one, and I think that was a reasonable perception. And then number two, when push came to shove toward the end, does she sit back and say we need to have a primary so we get this thing organized?
That was Mike Quigley's. The logical way to do it, I mean, of course, how's that ever happened in politics, Lou? He pretty much went in and said he was going to be a one-term guy, right? Or alluded to that.
That was my understanding, yeah.
And so when she saw him or met him or whatever, I don't know if she knew him before, she probably said he's older, he's going to be okay for 4 years, but surely not eight. And somewhere along the line, everybody's going to know, that he's not going to run for the other term, and we're going to have a normal primary stuff, and I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and hopefully do better this time. That would be my guess, but that would be me. That would make some sense. I don't know what her views were. Right? She probably had every intention.
Yeah, I mean, so much of this, so much of what happened over the last 8 months was driven by personalities and their own individual ambitions, rather than somebody sitting down and going, this makes a lot of sense for the country or for the party.
I think if you interviewed her 2 years ago, she would never have dreamed that there would not have been a primary system for her to get the nomination.
Well, yeah. And so the question is, I mean, you see how these dominoes fall. You pick a terrible VP candidate. She's a DEI hire. You pick her based on her race and her.
Well, she's not the first. I mean, if we get a different
sex.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. She performs the way you would suspect a DEI hire would. That is not. You're not picking somebody on merit. You're picking somebody on other factors. They put her in place, and then they realize that she's awful. And I don't know whether they thought that before, but they obviously realized this was somebody who was not going to outshine the president. And she comes in with a record of not being able to campaign worth a lick. And yet I think the expectation from her and from the people supporting her was that she was the heir apparent. And the longer they got down, or further they got down the road toward re-election or toward the 24 election, they realized that they couldn't have her as the heir apparent because she was terrible. And I honestly think the Bidens were doing everything they could to hang on to power. So you end up with this mess.
Well,
where she never gets vetted. This is going to be a really interesting story, but the first cracks in the wall are starting to show, and that's the cover up of the Biden incompetence. And my personal opinion is there ought to be some consequences.
If you're internal, and I did pretty good in terms of when I was at Allied Van Lines, I was the only kind of place that knew how to do any financial analysis or anything. And my boss was a terrific guy, Vice President. Boy, was he a hell of a handball player too! Kicked my ass. There's a way to do this. He would give me an assignment, and I would do it and write it up, and he'd present it to the board. He had zero ego about saying, "Hey, Tom did this. He did one hell of a job, and I'm proud to present it." I never outshone him. I never did anything. I did what he asked me to do, and we never. You can be a. You can be a really good VP or anything and do some stuff really well. Let the other person take credit for it, but everybody in the place knows, hey, this person knows what the hell they're doing. She didn't do that, unfortunately.
No, not one iota.
You can be very supportive and not take somebody's limelight, right?
Yeah, no, Tom, I agree. And the fact that, again, the fact that she didn't know how to do this, again, is indicative of the hiring criteria.
Why does anybody think, Lou? I mean, look at the, I'm not going to say the education, but look at the education and lifestyle stuff that you went through. If you were to put, and I'm not going to talk about myself because you're very successful. How much did you learn by being a ball boy? How much did you learn by listening to your dad deal with people, deal with men, not just men, women, but deal with how things progress in sports, how things progress legally, how things progress in the Army or in the Air Force. And she has none of that. And all the people that we know, I watched this guy try to be mayor here in Chicago. Look, the guy couldn't manage a Pee Wee League team. He has no skill set whatsoever for the job he's in. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. It doesn't mean you should cast him aside into some scrap heap somewhere. But he just doesn't know what he's doing. I watched the Jay Powell yesterday. Lou, I don't know what I'm watching. I mean, my brother thinks I'm being very critical of the man. Everything's Well, I don't. There's an old saying on the trading floor. There's three kinds of people in the world. Some people make things happen. Some people watch things happen, and most people wonder what happened. And I got him going in class number three. He doesn't seem to know. If you look at a money supply chart, I sent around yesterday. I don't expect you to look at this stuff. I sent around a money supply chart of Britain.
UK, so.
Yeah. And I'm looking at it, and I go, give this to a guy who's been in a monetary theory class for 3 weeks, and he's going to say, wow, something happened back here. They poured all this money in the place to do something. They started to drag most of it out. And look, probably their inflation rate went down way from where it was. And now they're sneakily putting money back in. It's probably creeping up again. That's exactly what's happening here and in Britain. The guy stands up in front of these people. He doesn't seem to know what the hell's going on. He started talking about some story about some supply chain stuff from COVID. What is the man even talking about? He either knows what he's doing and is losing his ability to BS everybody, or he has no idea what he's doing. And I don't know which is worse or which it is.
How did he get the job?
He was on the Federal Reserve and one of the more highly. He was wasn't he the vice chair for a while? When Yellen left, he moved up. I think that was it. I'm not positive on that. Greg, look that up if you don't mind. I think he was a vice chair.
This goes back, and we're seeing this starting to play out now, with Musk and.
Is he our new Rasputin?
And Vivek Ramaswamy? No, they're not Rasputins. What they're doing is, and this goes back to that thing I sent you about Defense Department, management. They are standing up, and you know Biden came in with this comment: the adults are in charge. Well, that was wrong. Biden wasn't an adult. Biden was an enfeebled, you know, old man falling apart, but he wasn't the adult in charge. I think what you're seeing right now is a play by a couple of, you know, pretty smart guys who know they're pretty smart and who have had a lot of success, and who are saying we are not going to allow, or we're going to push as hard as we can to prevent this system from operating the way it's been operating, because it's been a disaster.
Yeah, except the guy was just there.
This is the shakeout.
Except the guy was just there 4 years ago. And what the problem I have with Musk, I don't want to say this because I have clients out there. It's like a guy who's a brilliant brain surgeon trying to tell me how he should trade.
Well,
Musk is used to pushing people around, just like, and he fired a bunch of people at a place, and the place hung together. That's interesting.
Well, it didn't just hang together.
I mean, how does anybody know? Whether they're anywhere near, whether their research, whether they're you know, coming with new products and new stuff. How does anybody know if it's the same as it was 2 years ago? Nobody does.
Well, the only way we can look at that is
it still works.
How the market responds. But yeah. you have to take into account, and this is a classic line. I can't remember where I read it the first time, but even really smart people are stupid in strange situations.
You think you're smart on everything, and you're not.
This is going to be part of the shakeout, and I'm whether you like it or not, this is what Trump was elected to do. This is what a lot of people voted for.
Okay, well, a lot of people want people hanging from the street too, but I don't want that.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying this is what the electoral. This is not mob democracy. This is what our system produced this, and it's because the alternative was a disaster.
I don't want Elon Musk taking over the role of Congress. He's not.
I don't think he is. I think what you're
watching.
Well,
yesterday, one of the reasons why I think the market went down is he said, well, I don't care if the government shows down over Christmas. Well, we're not gonna go with this deal if this was put through to Congress.
You know, that's the market. Again, who's the president? You know,
this presidency. This is no different than actually it's better, the fiasco that happened in 2008 when Obama was coming in, the market had just totally crashed with all the stuff with the you know, Goldman Sachs almost going under and all that stuff. Bush was not the president during that. He wanted no part of that 6 weeks or 8 weeks between the election and
January. I don't this is not a situation where I've got somebody who says, I don't want to do this anymore. This is a situation in which we've had a non-functioning president for years, and the cabal that is around him is collapsing, and they can't get away from him fast enough. That's the Washington, Wall Street Journal story.
The level of the chessboard you're talking about, I agree with you. But the other level is the country, the financial system, the one that the Larry Kudlows of the world that Trump ended up hiring, by the way, as his economic advisor's chief, did nothing but say on TV that this was the best economy. What was it? The Goldilocks economy and the greatest story never told. A month later, we were in the deepest economic slump mess we were ever in.
I'm not gonna get again.
But I'm saying that was during
an administration. I can't go down in the weeds with you because I don't know enough.
Well, I'm just saying that the history of there was another view.
What's going to happen? This is going to be unpleasant, and it's going to be messy because you've got a guy who was elected to blow up a lot of what's happening. For example, this omnibus bill that I assume that's why the market crashed.
That's what I'm talking
about.
This
omnibus bill is a disaster.
Why?
Why?
It's the same thing Trump did when he was in office.
The omnibus bill that's been proposed is a nightmare. And Trump's people, the people who supported him, who voted for him, were sending a message saying, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to tolerate it.
Right, except he did it for 4 years.
It doesn't matter, Tom. That was then. This is now.
Okay.
Musk, for one thing, I think Trump has much better people advising him.
I think he does this time too. Yeah, I do too.
I think he's much better prepared for this his administration now than he was in 2016. But what this is going to be a shakeout, and this is part of it. People coming in saying we're not going to do this anymore. This is the first step, and it's going to have it's going to have ripple effects.
I actually don't have a problem with any of that. What I do have a problem with is it's, and I think the people on this show, all of us understand, even though we like to argue with each other, that this has been about a 40-year phenomenon, left and right.
Oh yeah.
The accusations were in the omnibus bill, all the Democratic crap that's in there. Hey, come on, your tax cut's still in there. That's part of the problem.
Well, and that's right. He needs economic room to maneuver, and told Johnson, get this fixed. I just think.
They're not going to get it fixed in a week.
No. You've got an element of...
They have AI, though.
Yeah, they got AI.
They do. You've got an element of anti-Trump, and it's personal, anti-Trump sentiment within the Republican Party that from Trump's perspective, needs to be exposed and removed. And that is going to be really
messy. The
people who
disagree with him, half of them are right. You're sounding like the Gestapo. Anybody doesn't agree with you, you got to get them out of there.
Well, but that's politics. Let me cite to you the famous Chicago line: "Politics ain't beanbag."
I understand that, but everybody I think needs to know. God, I hope everybody needs to know. Both sides' story for the last 50 years: Republicans lower taxes, we don't have the balls to cut spending enough for the taxes, and we lie about
exactly.
And then Democrats, let me give you some money to do something. And oh, by the way, we don't have the balls to raise taxes enough to make it happen. It's just accelerating and accelerating. And Carl's right.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean it needs. But why don't they make the omnibus bill? I don't have from now to. I think we're going to be really. I know the number is probably a little more than you do. The numbers are horrible. But somewhere along the line, say okay. This is what we're going to do. We're going to take this thing, make it to the end of February. Let the new Congress in. Let them do their job instead of Elon Musk telling people what they should be doing. Let Congress do their job. And I have no problem with Trump
Congress, and you just touched on, I think, the key here. Congress is not and will not do its job.
But now he's got a Republican Congress on both sides. There's no excuse for that. I don't want somebody from the outside saying, Musk is going to run the whole Congress instead of the Congress. I don't want that.
That's not what they're saying. My point is not. I mean, Musk is the avatar of all this. And Ram, did we ever figure out how to pronounce Vivek's name? Ramaswamy.
Yeah,
Is that right?
I thought I did a couple times. Ramaswamy.
Ramaswamy.
Ramaswamy. Is there another M in there? Okay. Ramaswamy. All right.
Ramaswamy is in Musk are the avatars for this. But what? Yeah, I you and I are both in agreement on how this process has been screwed up and what a disaster it is. The failure of Congress to challenge the executive and the rest of it all goes back two generations. But you know, Trump was elected and the people around him were elected to say enough. We're not gonna put up with it anymore. We are now going to start to try to drive Congress back to where it's supposed to be in terms of the way it's actually debating stuff, rather than these congressmen just being money raisers.
I totally agree, but I'm saying right now, I don't care if it's 6 weeks, you don't shut the government down over Christmas. You push it. You give the new Congress a chance to do their job, and you tell them, do your freaking job. I got no problem with that. But the idea that we're going to shut it down and somehow in the midst of this mess before the election, we're going to do all this between now and then, no, we're not.
You got to start. I mean, if I look at it from the perspective of these guys, I think they say you got to start somewhere. And
but this isn't where you start.
Well, like that's
give them a
opinion,
chance to
man.
But I mean, how do you not let the new Congress get a chance at it?
If they've got the.
When are they sworn in?
This goes back.
Are they sworn in?
Back to my earlier question. Who's the president?
Well, but are they sworn in before he is? They are, aren't they?
I'm sorry.
When is Congress sworn in?
The same time, 20th.
Oh, I thought they were earlier. They're the 20th.
Yeah.
I'd say if I'm him. By the way, my instincts are exactly the same as his on this. They much as people don't think that they really are. I'd say, okay, we're letting this slide till March. You guys got till March to come up with a real budget here. We're going to start telling. I absolutely love the fact that Ramaswamy came out with we don't want to give money to hospitals anymore if they put a 70% overhead rate on it. I'm all over them. I'm with them on that. I'm clapping them on the back for pulling that out because I wish I knew that. These guys are not dummies. They're not at all. But let's do it the right way because you and I are.
Okay. Well, I would say you and I are in agreement, first of all, which note
scary.
The time and the date,
yeah.
Greg. I would say that we are, remember the rock opera Tommy?
Yeah.
You know, what happens when Tommy, the prophet, the pinball prophet, comes in and tells the disciples they've got a toe to his line if they want to be, you know, reach the state of Nirvana, and the song is "We're not going to take it."
Yeah,
you know, we're not going to take it. Never did and never will. You know, don't want your religion. I mean, you're getting. You have a whole two generations, Tom, of government people, who have operated in a particular way that benefits them, and now you've got people coming in saying we're not going to allow that anymore.
We got to go to break here a little bit. The problem I have, and I promise I will do this. We'll finish up my cleaning in next week. I've got a couple of pieces of paper in here that are absolutely classic from like 25 years ago. It's not about, you can blame all you want on Congress, which, by the way, I do too. But the American citizenry has to look in the mirror.
Exactly. And say, they voted for this.
I'm not talking about what they think. I've got a piece of paper here somewhere that says they can't understand why the government can't balance a budget, but they don't want any program that they're involved in cut.
That's what I mean. They voted. The American public has voted for this. And the last time we had a candidate stand up and say, you can't do this, was 90, what was it, 90, 92?
Yeah, my only problem with Trump is he's such a scapegoater. His personality, as you obviously can tell, rubs me the wrong way. How many people who want what's his name? Musk and Ramaswamy. I'm getting better at that, Greg. Thank you. Going to Washington and they want to throw people out. Well, human instinct is everybody except you is overpaid and underworked, right? That's just the way people are, unfortunately.
Yep.
So, but if you did, if you succeeded, if you and I, if they gave us the job, we don't look as bad yet as who are the two old farts, Simpson Bulls. All you do is pick up their manual. It's the same thing. Nothing's changed, right? All you have to do is read the book.
The problem is, as I said, Ross Perot, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, but raised the same issue.
But if we somehow found a way, and I think you could, because there's duplicate efforts going on in Washington, all over the place, I think you could cut the fat 15% over a period of time, get rid of a department that doesn't do so much, let those people apply for other places. You could do it, and I'm all for it. The problem I have with the dunderheads that vote, I hate to say that, what does that mean? What does that mean to your budget? 1/100 of 1%.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't get. We're fighting. It's like the migrants. You know, I argue with Kevin and Carl about this all the time. Do I think a whole bunch of people being piled into Chicago and we can't deal with stuff at the border and problems in Venezuela, do I think all those things are good things? No, I don't. But what I do know is that in Chicago, of a metropolitan area of 6.5 million people, if things were going good here, it wouldn't be a pimple in the ass of an elephant, money-wise, to somehow get these 100-some thousand people involved. I mean, look at what we did in the Great Migration when everybody from the South came up here and got in the factories. If we had jobs, it wouldn't be a problem. Problem is, we're so screwed up to start with that everything's a problem.
Yeah,
right?
everything. Well, and so again, I think the look for these guys, and then we can go to break, is we got to start somewhere. We're going to start here.
I agree. SP Futures up. By the way, I want to bring up the article you sent, and somebody's going to show me. And how do we tie together, Lou, all the stuff we're talking about? Now all of a sudden we have problems in defense. Okay, what are we going to do? We're going to rethink what we're spending money on. We need to spend more. We're out of shells. We're out of this. How do we do that when we see all these companies all combined and not even there anymore? I mean, that's a problem. SP Futures up 40, NASDAQ Futures up 155. This is a little bit of a bounce here, but not like yesterday. We didn't hear the numbers yesterday. If you haven't already heard them, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
People of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I won't have a country that is run by a bought Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bought Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I'm working with the bought Congress. I'm going to abandon the bought Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bought Congress. And until we get rid of the bought Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Rock Bank, Stocks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 144. This is the last day of the Decembers, right, Greg? And tomorrow they go off the board. Get December futures and March futures trading. But they go the top step already? The end of March or not?
You got to roll.
But are there? But the lead futures still December till tomorrow morning, or is it
depends
March?
On which contracts. Right. And grains were already into. We're rolling into March.
All right, I think probably we are in the spoos too. I'm not sure. But anyway, they're both up about the same amount. We have bonds up 4 basis points, 5.4 4.54 is a big run-up in 10-year rates yesterday. The bund up 5 basis points, 2.29. Japan is unchanged at 1.07. Oil down 16 cents, still over 70 bucks, 70.42. Brent down 26 cents, 73.13. Natural gas up 11 cents, 3.48. RBOB unchanged, 193. Gold down 27 bucks, 26.26. Nobody likes gold. Nobody liked anything yesterday. Bitcoin, gold, whatever it was, the price of your baseball cards went down yesterday. Silver down 87 cents, wow, 29.86. Every time it's been under 30, it's been a buy. Don't know about this time, but it has been. Copper down 7 cents, 408. Foreign exchange, the dollar, 104 on the euro. So the dollar got very strong yesterday. British pound, unchanged, 126. So I'm thinking a trade here, Greg, would have been long pound, short euro. And that seems to be, well, it would have been the trade if we would have done it. Crypto up 905, 102,000. Was down like $5,000 yesterday. Yes, here are the numbers. If you're not seating, sit. Dow Jones down 1,100 points. S&P down 178. Futures were down 200, I think. NASDAQ down 716 at 3.5%. Ouch. This morning, Europe. DAX down 178.9%. FTSE down 91, 1.1%. CAC around down 79, 1.1%. We're in Asia. Nikkei down 268.7%. Hang Seng down 112. 0.6. Shanghai down 12. That's only 0.4%. We have Force Traffic, Weather, Sports. We hope we do a little better today here.
Good morning, everyone. It is 6:41 here in Chicago. 28 degrees. High of 36 today. Cloudy and breezy during the day. Possible snow tonight. Ugh. Phoenix, 53 right now. Sunny and warm. Possible record temperatures of 81. Traffic, we have the inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 18 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook, 33 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 16 minutes. And Stevenson from 294th. Stevenson 294 to the Ryan is 20 minutes. Sports, Bulls at Celtics. We got the Kraken at Hawks. And then tonight, the NFL Broncos at Chargers. Chargers favored by 3. And that's all I got.
The Bears are Sunday. Yeah. Tomorrow's the Irish.
Tomorrow's the Irish.
Hey, Professor Lou, what do you think happens this weekend? The first time kind of significant college games go against the pros. The pros kind of messed up on this, didn't they, by putting their Saturday games on?
I think so. And I'll be that'll be interesting. The only issue that I think is out there is maybe if you're a student of the game is maybe quality of football differential and athleticism. But in terms of interest, I mean, I think the college game will absolutely rival the pros in terms of watching, especially given the expanded format and the fact that Notre Dame's involved. You know, the Irish pull a huge TV market. As all those Catholic schools tell their people to watch.
You know, what's interesting, and I don't know if it's changed as of today because it's a daily occurrence, the Irish were the only school that didn't have anybody in the portal.
Yeah, I thought I was listening to you and Kevin yesterday, and I thought that was a really interesting note. I didn't know that. And
Well, it might not be the truth today. I mean,
The portal, this whole portal thing, of course, is roiling a number of college teams, and again, it goes back to how do you prevent this? Well, you do it with NIL money and NIL contracts, and see if you can prevent people from leaving or not participating in the games by withholding their NIL payments.
Well, but on the one hand, I'm in total agreement. On the other hand, it's not, if the student wants to go somewhere else, which appears to be his right to do, he's got to get in the place in time for the new semester, the new quarter.
Yep.
And if the schools decide to play into February, it's not the kid's fault.
I agree. I mean, this goes back to the point we made a year and a half, 2 years ago with as the NIL monster started to rear its ugly head, and we said, wait a minute. If only there was an organization that had some control over college athletics and how college athletics are administered, That would be great. You know, we turn a look at the NC2A, and they just step back.
Well,
the litigation's paralyzed them.
In a competitive world, why does there always have to be a watcher? It doesn't have to be.
True. So, but you know, while the system shakes out in this competitive world, you have, and we've talked about this too, when you have an administrative process imposed over a market, a pure market operation, you're going to have a lot of ragged edges, and what we're watching right now is the development of a number of ragged edges.
Well, it is a morphing from, you know, I get all kinds of people who give me stories. Hey, come on, in the 50s, you know, they were giving a guy $100 under the table. It's not the same thing. I'm sorry. So it's a difference between a leak in your faucet and a tsunami.
I mean, agreed.
I mean, right now, you're seeing a morphing from, and this is where I think you're going to see some guidelines, for lack of a better term, going to come from the IRS.
You know, that we talked about that before. I think that's right. I think you're because the tax people almost never miss a trick in terms of getting more revenue. But we have to look also at what's about to happen with NIL with this court settlement in California that's going to be approved next spring. And if that goes into effect, and that looks, by the way, that looks very much like a salary cap in terms of how they're going to administer NIL money and all the associated limitations on it to try to level the playing field.
Why should it be level?
It should be level because if you only have a few schools that are power schools playing football, your attractiveness for your audience goes down.
I don't know about that. There's 32 teams in the NFL, and they do pretty well by restricting access. What makes you think there's not going to be? They could just start to be competitive.
But if their teams, but if you only have one or two teams that are successful. And win and provide an enjoyable viewing experience, the market falls off.
We had that forever with the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Well, baseball is, yeah, I agree. They still do. Baseball's got to deal with that, and that's going to be an issue. But my point is that the colleges are moving into this kind of a role, and I think opens it up for outside investment and operation by money managers.
They're How does Notre Dame pay profit out to a third party?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, they're going to end up with essentially a professional league.
Yep.
And anybody who wants to be in it, and you're going to end up with, there's going to be the sponsored Notre Dame team, where people maybe don't even have to go to class, and you're going to end up with people in class having a club football team. Playing and God knows who else, John Carroll,
I mean, this goes so one of the things that we talk about in my Air Force Service Academy circles is what is going to happen to the service academies. You know, the Army Navy game was a huge deal because both teams had winning records for the first time in like 20 years. What's going to happen to those service academy programs? And athletics is a big deal at the service.
They're going to be part of the lower 70
academies. It really is. It helps it feel, in terms of martial spirit and everything else. It develops. They develop that in part through their athletic programs, but those places can't do NIL.
And they're going to be part of. I think that. Well, I've thought this all along. Doesn't make it right. As this goes down the chain, there's going to be schools where it absolutely is a sponsored pro team. And there's going to be a lot of schools that say, we don't want any part of that, and we're going to drop back down to where we used to be.
Right. And I think that's what's got to happen. And I'm sort of surprised that I haven't seen this, but we've been quietly nudging our alumni organization to try to get the athletic department to pick the phone up, call the other ADs at the service academies and the ADs at places like, you know, Northwestern, or Stanford, or Cal, or Rice, or Vanderbilt, where you know the programs, academics are still crucial, and say, let's set up an SAT conference where we're not going to have to fight the NIL battle, and we'll have college athletes playing football. And oh, by the way, we will occasionally be scheduling against those 70-team Super League that's going to develop, or 64-team Super League that's going to develop. And because we will give them, when they play us, we will give them the patina of authenticity and legitimacy to say, oh, look, our student athletes are playing some other student athlete team. And then just sit back
In a sport where injury is so prevalent, I don't want my kid playing for a club team going up against Alabama. I'm sorry. He doesn't belong on that field.
Well, as somebody who took the field in what might have been considered a club field, a club team at that time against top 25 talent, what I can tell you is that the Service Academy kids hold their own.
Well, on a general basis, I don't want them being the chumps, you know, all the time.
No, they wouldn't be the chumps all the time. And you know, every now and then, one of those teams will pop up, witness Vanderbilt beating Alabama, will pop up and surprise somebody. And that's part of the drama of, college sports.
But I sound like
the old Wide World of Sports commercial.
Drama of athletic competition.
Yeah, it would provide. They're still Division I programs. It would provide a legitimate compensation for those other programs. I don't know. That's just my idea. But I don't think the IDs, as they are now constituted, are going to be able to manage it with any degree of competency the kind of complexity that's about to be introduced into this whole NIL situation.
As I was teasing the two guys who know more about this than anybody on the show are you and Kevin, right? So I love jousting with both of you. And my question is, once you cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war, as Shakespeare once said, but I think he stole that from Plato, didn't he, or somebody? If I'm going to, I'll say Northwestern because I know they have this program, if I'm going to go there and be pre-med and I'm going to be in med school, they have a six-year program where it's not 4 and 3. Okay, so I can get out of their med school in 6 years. Why the hell can I? I'm a college student. Why the hell can I play football for 6 years? Who says I can only play for 4? Screw those guys. Why can't, if a student now, an undergrad's not good enough and he's got to get his MBA for 2 years, why can't I play 6 years? If all of a sudden these guys can play 5 and 6 and 7 years, like some of them have, I don't know that, and they're making as much as the pros, you're not getting me to invest in the Bears.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be those tickets will be cheaper, and you'll have just as entertaining a product.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
Tickets tomorrow night are $250 a throw. They're that cheaper.
The tickets for Notre Dame? For the playoffs, yeah.
It's $250, $150, and $125 or something.
Yeah.
What do you think a regular game is? Regular game's a hundo. That's what the Bears are.
Well, you guys are I pay what did I pay last season? I think I paid $400 for season tickets to Air Force per seat. That was for what, 8 games?
Yeah,
seven games.
At our previous discussions, Kevin just texted a bunch of stuff that is in this bill that isn't really an omnibus bill. And I agree with Kevin. If that stuff's in there, like a new stadium for the Commanders, I want it out. But I want to set this together somehow, Lou, if it's possible together. You don't know how much you guys, when you send me stuff, how much it coalesces into like a big problem. The thing you sent me the other day, not that you sent me stuff's a problem. That's not the problem. The guy in there, whoever wrote the article, had the chart in there you sent me a while ago that I can't find.
Yeah, about the consolidation.
Yeah,
about
all
industry.
These companies that used to make all this stuff, and there was competition in the defense industry. Now there isn't anymore, or there's way less. I mean, how do we? And I keep running through my feeble brain here. I was listening to people yesterday talk about how the Fed lowered rates and how it's going to lower everybody's credit card rates. Credit card rates are higher, hit record highs yesterday.
I know.
It has nothing to do with... Why do people keep saying stuff like this, Lou, without checking it out?
I mean, well, for one thing, they don't have the kind of economic expertise that you do, but this omnibus bill comment that Kevin raised...
Well, I'm sure he's right.
Is exactly the same kind of issue that you see in that Defense Department article that I sent you.
It's the same issue everywhere.
It is. It's the way we do business and the way our executive branch has taken over the lawmaking role of Congress. We're going to see chips. The chips are starting to come off that block of granite. The Chevron, anti-Chevron decision from the Supreme Court last year is one big chip. But there are others.
Tell people what that was. Can't just say that.
Oh, it eroded the deference that the courts have to give to federal agencies when they are rulemaking. So you know, Congress passes a generic sort of law that says water pollution is bad, and then they turn it over to the EPA and say figure it out, and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, runs amok with rules and regulations saying okay. Water, we're gonna call this, you know, 30-by-20-foot pond, or temporary collection of water that drains onto your property. We're gonna call that a wetland.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And now you, the landowner, can't plow it over to grow stuff on it, or build something on it because it's a quote wetland by our screwed up definition.
Well, so as a guy in the regulated industry. You don't have to tell me about it. Taking a ball and run with it.
But in the bad old days, the court would say, well, it's the EPA. We got to give them deference under a case called Chevron. That's been overturned. It was overturned last year. Now what a court is supposed to say is, does that make sense in the overall regulatory scheme?
Well,
no,
how does this all, I think Trump has put some pretty good people around him, by the way. I actually like this. I'm not a big Musk fan, but I like this Ramaswamy guy. This Musk is anybody who gets $9 billion from the government to me is kind of water on both shoulders. You know, it's telling other people how they're getting money from the government because he got more than anybody. But that's just me, I guess. But if we're going to talk about the healthcare stuff, he's right about not giving the research money to Northwestern where they take 70% of it. Or put some kind of overhead rate on it that high. But if you and I want to put together a healthcare facility that is a lot cheaper, when I say cheaper, more cost-effective, like some of these, care units you walk in, some of those things are pretty darn set up pretty well. Now, is the government going to make us borrow at 18% to do the job when they're giving the money to Northwestern for nothing? I mean, there's no competition. They're not these places in the defense industry. Are they is Lockheed going to say, this is what you have to pay, shut up and like it? Or is the government going to say, if somebody wants to be a competitor to Lockheed, can maybe we make sure that they get some financing? Once you go down this road, Lou, all kinds of stuff has to happen because the combinations have happened over such a long period of time. The economic system, and this is what I'm constantly railing about, that people don't understand what the hell I'm talking about, probably. I'm constantly railing about the competitive system that is the backbone of our country is mostly gone in most industries.
In a lot of places, yeah. And so what you're seeing in defense, it's starker in defense, I think, because of the consolidation of industries and the public nature of the contracts.
Yeah.
What you're seeing in defense right now, if you look at like a place like Anduril Industries, and Greg and I had a little talk about Palmer Luckey a few weeks ago, but you look at a place like Anduril Industries, which has basically come into the defense scheme or defense side and said, Lockheed, Raytheon, all you guys, you're too bloated, you're too big, you're too stupid. Watch what we can do at scale with a startup unencumbered by all of your, you know, your DOD contract bloat. And you're seeing a dramatic change in terms of weapons procurement and weapons development by one company, Tom.
What kind of stuff they make?
They make drones. They make artificial intelligence systems. They make electronic warfare systems. But all of it is scaled for production. So they come in and say, look, we can make you 1,000 pretty good cruise missiles that can be fired from helicopters, that when you fire them, they go out and find targets on their own, and they're pretty good. Are they completely survivable? No, but they cost a tenth of a Hellfire missile.
Now, we don't have that much time, but give me a... Did they have a factory doing something else and they moved into this? Did they buy a piece of land, build a factory? Did they buy an old building? How the hell did they even get started? I mean, how do you start something at that level? I mean, people have asked me, how would I start building railroad cars here in Chicago? I go, you mean from a prairie?
They started with an infusion of capital because Palmer Luckey is the guy who invented the Oculus.
Okay.
And so he looked around and said, I can disrupt this whole industry with an initial investment and a couple of products. And that's what he did. But all of his stuff is scaled to be quote disrupting by being able to be rapidly produced using 3D printers in part and scalable off-the-shelf technology, but worked in a way using AI and technology that suddenly gives his missiles.
He had a going concern. He didn't go build a building. He had something going already. Which you have to have, I think, by the way.
He took his Oculus Rift money and his Facebook money and said, I'm going to start up a Defense Department
good for him.
Program. Yeah, it's a really interesting story. But his weapon systems are terrifying.
There's got to be 100 people in the Defense Department that can't stand a guy.
Oh, they're millions. You don't think Lockheed and Boeing and the rest of them are looking at this guy going, come on, man. You know, we're shooting cruise missiles. The government's going to be shooting cruise missiles that are $3 to $5 million a copy, and yours are like 500,000 or 100,000. Moreover,
I bet they've already tried to bite a guy.
I'm sure they have. They said, moreover, we want, you know, we can only produce like 50 of them a year. You can turn out 1,000. In a year, and that's without trying. So his you got to read about his program. I think he's mentioned in that handout. But yeah, take a look at that. That's a disrupting technology force driven by an individual. That's that you saw the reference in that article to 10 times or 100 times engineers.
Yep.
You know, the so-called 10 plus or 100 plus engineers, the guys that are worth what I call the gold collar employees, the guys that are worth 100 or 1,000 of your normal people.
Yeah, well,
that's him.
All right, Lou, we got Dash, but it was last night was a Tooman night, so a lot of judges and lawyers were hanging around. Talk about a group. But one of the guys is an accountant, and let's just say he loves to bet on sports or football, and he doesn't like college, right? So he bets only on pro. And I said, okay, what is your view? What's your over-under Saturday on the competing games? What's the ratings, pro versus college? And he was like, 90 pro, 10 college. And I'm going, I don't know about that. What's your call?
I don't think so. I would say, since we're not in playoffs, I would say 60 college, 40 pro.
Wow, I was going to say 50-50. Okay, we're going to write this down, and we'll... Well, Kevin will get the numbers for us. He's good at that. The next week, and they have probably a pretty good. Of course, they got Kansas City playing, and Mahomes probably won't play, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how big of a game this. Steelers is a pretty good game, though. Steelers playing somebody. The pros have two pretty good games. You think they knew about this college playoff when they scheduled the games, or they totally slipped their mind?
No, I mean I they knew in the sense. Here's where I think they look at it, Tom, and then we let Dan on. There's no such thing as too much football.
Yeah. What about the game the other night? Do you even know who Scooter Coffee is? I'm not a big coffee guy, but they played it in a soccer stadium near the quarterback's hometown, so he'd play or something. The Memphis guy.
I hadn't heard that.
Well, look, I was watching the game a little bit. You know, it was on where I was, and I'm. I go, that doesn't really look like a... What kind of stadium is that? I thought maybe they would do it in the old Cotton. Well, it's in Dallas
Scooter
somewhere.
Scooter Coffee Bowl.
Yeah, and it was Memphis against somebody. And
yeah, Memphis against West Virginia, I think.
And it was in a... I'm looking at that. That doesn't look like a football stadium. It wasn't. It was a soccer stadium.
Well, again, no such thing as too much football, Chief.
Oh, well, ESPN, what else are you going to put on?
Yeah.
If you're at a Cub station, just keep playing reruns of 1920 Cub games. I mean, it, you know, you watch them once, but how many times can you watch them? Anyway, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 49. Oh, Merry Christmas, Lou. You won't be on until after Christmas. Are you guys traveling? Or what are you doing?
Yeah, I won't be available next week. So I'll be at an undisclosed location.
Oh God. All right. So you're out next Thursday, but you're back after New Year's.
Yep.
All right, bud.
After New Year's, I can do it. So I'm just going to miss a week.
All right, SP Futures.
If you want to plug, me in. I'll be out way out of the time zone, so it won't work.
So when are you leaving? You're leaving like this weekend.
Yeah.
All right, bud. Then we'll see you when you come back. So we got to give you a Happy New Year too, then.
Well, that's right. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to the entire Stocks and Jocks crew.
Let's have take care. At least one more nice trip around the sun, eh?
That's right. Take care.
Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
It's like I took the wrong week to quit drinking.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Lone Rope X, Tyson Jackson. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 46. NASDAQ Futures up 151. You would think this is a yes kind of day, but boy, after yesterday, it's a. What are we back? Not even a third? Or not even close to a third on the NASDAQ. Maybe a quarter on the SPOOs, and NASDAQ was down, what, 700 and something yesterday? Mr. Dan, how are you? Did you have your puts yesterday? We have Dan.
It was 700, yeah.
Did you have your puts?
No, but I had my bonds, and our bonds actually did well, despite what the market was saying. You know, as long as you weren't in long-term or bonds, as we've been saying, stay away from long-term bonds, you're good in the short term still. Short rates are cut, and as we expected. You guys probably did really well, though.
On a relative scale... Yeah, I mean we didn't have any extra stuff, but we had we've been letting, you know, since the market's been so bullish, for God's sake, we really had stopped selling calls above the market because all we were doing was chasing them, Dan. I mean, so we stopped doing that. So we were pretty much, and we were letting the puts drag a little bit, and so we were making, you know, 80% maybe of what the market was making, even though we were protected. But then this week, my brother goes, what do you think about, you know, with this Fed thing coming out? This looks starting to look a little weird. What do you say we nudge all our puts up pretty much right to the strike? And, you know, go right, get some, you know, I won't say real protection, but protection right out of the gate. And we did that for everything. We did it for our big position. We have huge positions in XLV. We did it in the Qs. We did it in the Spiders. And we did it in the Russell. So yesterday when the carnage occurred, you know, like the Russell was down like 9, I'll bet we lost 1.5, maybe. You don't make. Now all of a sudden, if you take the 10 points up and the 10 points down, everybody else is even, and we're probably up 5 or 6 from the rolls back and forth. So, but you're never gonna, you know, it. Now, well, today we still have them in the money. So if I don't think it's gonna happen again. If it happened again today, we'd be 1-for-1 making pretty much because. Our puts are probably 80-90 delta. We're going to try and roll some of them today. It's a constant maneuvering because the market is, you know, the market's crazy. I just, Dan, as we go back and forth, first of all, I'm blessed by being on the show and hanging around with my brother and other people in the office, some pretty sharp people. And it just bothers the living bejesus out of me that I listen to people on, you know, making a lot of money doing what we do basically for nothing on Stocks and Jacks, try and educate people and do stuff. And I hear people just say the wrong stuff all day long. I must have heard 50 people yesterday say, This means that everybody's credit card rates are going down and this is good for consumer. Dan, they're not going down. We're at an all-time record high, for God's sake, credit card rates. They're not going down. Who's kidding who? Right? I mean,
there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of speculation right now, and it's actually, if anything, this is a good time to be turning to the old 1920s Cubs games. You know, as you said earlier, this is really the time not to be listening to it, because a lot of it is, it's funny, it's getting tired, it's getting tiring, and the same old stories on AI and crypto just keep going. I think yesterday was a little bit of a wake-up call, and it kind of brought us back to reality in terms of the market being overvalued and just too heated and too much momentum, and I think yesterday took some of that out of the market. The news itself was not new. You know, this is what we expected. This is what the markets expected. The 25 basis point cut that we got, that was what the market expected. The fact that the Fed would cut less next year, that would be in their discussion. That's what we expected. And I just think it was an excuse or a time for a little bit of a reality check to take the focus away from, say, AI and crypto and you know, how to make money quickly, and put it back more on reality and where the market, you know, what's impacting the market. So there's a lot more talk yesterday about housing and, you know, the fact that, you know, something as simple that people haven't been paying attention to, but if you just go back to September, the mortgage rate was at around 6%, the 30-year, and now it's over 7% again. So Lennar came out with bad earnings. I'm not totally surprising, but I think that shook the market a little bit too. Just that, you know, we still have some major issues with housing and the inventory is still low. So forget about all the other things like the credit and the debt ceiling and all that. They seem to be footnotes, you know, the whole story about the, you know, that we're the debt limit and the level of debt that we're dealing with right now seems to be such a minor issue and not even discussed as much as it should be discussed. And that, I think, is where people are going to really start understanding the markets and not be caught off guard like they were yesterday.
What do you make of, do you think the sell-off, I have to ask a question here, I got a chart here that I never saw before, so I find out these things once in a while, Dan, but do you think the sell-off was more due to Powell's, in my mind, the most mystifying performance I've ever seen by a Fed chair, or, well, that covers a lot of ground, so but a mystifying performance, or Trump's people saying they're not going to go for the spending bill, and now that Kevin's telling me what's in it, maybe they're right about that, and shutting down the government over the holidays. I mean, which was more conducive, do you think?
I think the Fed news probably was more, because the other seems to be, we've been there before. You know, it's always at the 11th hour that we talk about a shutdown, and somehow or another, miraculously, it doesn't happen, or if it does happen, it doesn't last very long, so... that's you know, that probably sounds more like old rhetoric, you know, just something that's likely to be heard over and over again. The news about the Fed, again, as I mentioned, was not really a surprise. It was what the market, it was already built into the market, and it was what the market was expecting. It's just that it hadn't been the focus of the market, and I think it gave the market an excuse to correct.
I want to talk more about the Fed stuff, but this little chart here is intriguing me. I've seen charts of credit card interest before, right? And if I had, you know, half a brain, I guess I could have put the prime rate in there and assessed, I'll use the term, the margins the banks get. But here in this one chart, it only goes to 2024. But I think last year the rates went up, this year the rates went up, not down. But it goes to 2023. It starts in 2013. And it says the credit card rate was 12.9%. In 2014, it was 13.7%. But the weird part here is, in 2013, it says the prime rate was 3.3. So the edge the banks were getting was 9.6. Every year since then, well, actually 16 went down a little bit from 15. We're up to a 14.3 bank edge. In 2023, the prime rate was 8.5, and they're charging 22.8. And now their edge has gone up to 14.3.
Right.
You think they're screwing people enough or what, for God's sake?
It is absolutely expanded. There's no question. I mean, that's and I, you know, I think there are promises that are being made, and there's speculation again. And I think the consumer and the investor are both confused, and in some cases they're listening and believing some of the, you know, some of the news that's coming out talking about how you know, credit card rates are lower, or going to be lower. There's an anticipation, but that is all speculation. I mean, that it's all rhetoric. It's just talk. It's and it's interesting how a lot of people have been convinced by it.
You're going. We're missing some words, Dan.
There's a little bit of a bad connection here. Where, you know, I'm in the Palm Beach area, and there seems to always be a connection. It could be some of the signals over to Mar-a-Lago that are being interrupted here. So
they got a drone over your place checking out.
It's a cloudy, gloomy morning here in Palm Beach, and there could be some activity going on.
I run this by my brother. Be pissed because I keep taking a shot at Paul, but it sounded like he was perplexed as to why this inflation is so sticky. He's doing it. Doesn't he get it?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That I think is a concern. You know, he's obviously patting himself on the back as well. You know, in terms of talking about how the labor, you know, market is looking good. But the surprise of, you know, that inflation is still there is what surprises me as well. That he's that he is genuinely misunderstanding that we still have inflation and that's still an issue. I think I know I've mentioned this, you know, in the last few shows, and I continue to listen really carefully to people who work as servers or people who work in support positions, and just try to do like some, you know, some very casual conversation to see what they view as the economy is impacting them. And there really is quite a different world, as we've discussed. There is the world of people who are trying to make it, the world of people who can't afford to take their families out to the restaurant anymore, because as one woman mentioned to me yesterday, not only is the service not good and the prices are higher, it's just, you know, we can't afford it, but the places that we're going to eat are having trouble finding people to work, or, you know, people that are taking their job seriously. So I think there is a world out there that is not really there are two different worlds out there in terms of how the economy, and I still think the vast majority of citizens are those ones who are impacted, those people who are trying to make ends meet on two jobs or trying to raise families on two jobs. And there's a big discrepancy, I think, between what people who, the haves and the have-nots, if you will, in this world. And the news that we're hearing is not really talking very much about the have-nots. It's talking in generalities, but it's not talking specifically. It's not giving examples. It's not talking, you know, percentages and dollar amounts. And all those things are really important, because it's consumer. What drives the financial markets is investor expectations. It's the expectations, it's the anticipation of what's going to happen in the market that drives the market, and consumer expectations as well. And what's very interesting, Chief, is a few, you know, some earnings came out yesterday. Nike got killed. You know, Nike has their own issues, but they also have the same issues that a lot of retailers have in this environment, which is, this money is making money in the stock market, but individuals aren't necessarily spending it, and they're not spending it the way that you would expect for this level of income that we're seeing being made in the equity market, in the stock market.
Well, I would agree. There's problems with the tax laws. There's problem with And Carl, I think, is very articulate when he talks about all the amount of money that's in the medical community. And you see this amount of cash going to, like, these college players. And you, first, you're kind of, some people are appalled. Some people say it's about time. You know, whatever. There's views all over the... But when you and I, Dan, if you and I were sitting down having an adult beverage, I doubt very far we'd get in the discussion and say, where is all the money coming from? I mean, who's exactly putting up this cash? Who are the advertisers? Who aren't the advertisers? And you look on some of these games, certainly if you look on CNBC, I'm going to say a tremendous amount of the advertising is coming from patented drugs where they're trying to talk people into talking their doctor into a $1,000 a month drug. And they're not paying for it. The insurance company's paying for it. If we were to straighten out that little mess, I think the amount of cash going to some of these football games, CNBC, would dry up like a rock, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, no question about it. I don't know that it's a new issue, though. I mean, I think it's an issue that's gotten worse over the years. But I mean, looking back at some old, you know, TV shows with commercials, even going back to the 50s, you know, they were talking about drugs and, you know,
But they would be talking about over-the-counter stuff.
Over-the-counter, you're exactly right.
Alka-Seltzer is no way. They can't bid for...
Right, Geritol, we're talking something different. But no, what you're talking about, the pharma industry is definitely a major issue and is a major amount of money that is coming from them you know, the press and the media has definitely been continuing to push that, and that there's no question there's a lot of money. I think that's been that's where a lot of our inflation pressures will continue to persist unless that situation is resolved, or until that situation is resolved. But I think we are having inflation pressures still from other areas as well. There is still low inventory in housing. There are still, you know, rates that aren't necessarily affordable. Prices that aren't affordable.
But we can't. One of the guys, Cox, Jeff Cox, who's on CNBC all the time, and I think he's pretty good, wrote an article about how the first thing Trump needs to do is to build, you know, 200,000 houses or something, or 300,000, whatever it was. That doesn't help. To build a house now, it's going to cost more than the house that's there. The replacement cost of these places...
Absolutely.
I have a conspiratorial question for you, because we had a couple guys, I sent this out.
And that actually is that's a big problem in Florida.
Yeah. Well, I have a conspiracy. If you look at... Take Powell's utterances yesterday, and he doesn't seem to... If you are and you just mentioned it too, you're talking about things that cause inflation. As you know, I think there's only one thing that causes inflation: money in the system. The stuff everybody else talks about, yes, if there's a shortage of housing, will housing prices go up? Yes, but other stuff is going to go down. If the general level inflation is only, but I sent out to everybody, I should have sent it to you, the UK money supply map chart. Shows this, it's the exact same chart as ours. A big bulge during COVID started to come down. They came down more than we did, by the way. The more attempt to get inflation under control, and all of a sudden in the last year, they're putting more money in the system again. And if you read the news of UK this week, their inflation's turning up again. They don't know why. Well, just look at the chart. I'll tell you why. And ours is doing the exact same thing. Now, the question is, Powell seemed to me like he wasn't even in charge, didn't he? I mean, it's like he's confused as to why he expects inflation to keep going down with the policy he has. Either he doesn't know what he's doing, or he's in denial or something. But I mean, you look at this chart. If I gave it to you and said, "Here's the chart of money supply," you're going to go, "Looks to me like inflation's going back up again a little bit," which it is.
I mean,
I mean, it's right there.
And that is a big risk.
But why? Now, if he's not in charge, somebody somewhere is telling these central banks to do this. Is it the people from Davos? Is it Trump? Is it Biden? Is it who's over the prime minister? Somebody seems... It's like there's an invisible hand behind all this, doesn't it?
I totally agree. Some of it is, I think, the change in administration itself. But also, I 100% agree with you, Chief, in terms of, you know, what I came away from with yesterday. There was less conviction in Powell's speech. There was less conviction that inflation was under control in terms of it. You know, there was still this sense of uncertainty that at this point, because they were so aggressive about cutting, especially towards the end of this year, that you would not have expected that level. You would have expected a higher level of conviction that inflation is under control, and we did not see that. And it doesn't seem like he's taken, as you're alluding to, and I agree, a sense of responsibility going forward, or that there's going to be some sense of, and I think it's that lack of credibility and that lack of decisiveness and that lack of, you know, concern, or that question of concern about potential policy change that he doesn't know about, that's out of his hands. And I think that came through in his speech, and that also, I'm sure, is part of the reason for, you know, the sell-off. We don't, you know, as investors, we don't like that level of uncertainty, and that's a level that we can't wrap our arms around when it comes to things like policy. And if there is a big brother or somebody out there who is influencing this, and there's likely to be some forces out there that we're not totally aware of, but at least from what we can see, he's not providing us, Powell's not providing us with that level of comfort that, you know, things are under control and that we're on course. You know, he said that a few times, but not with the same level of conviction that we would have expected at this meeting.
Well, when your chairman of the Fed comes out and describes the economy as being in a fog, it's not exactly the illusion you want.
Right. Yeah, and I think, but I do think with more of what he's saying is political, like a lot of that is more of the, you know, what is going to happen with some of the policy changes as opposed to what's happening. This is really where the distinction needs to stay separate. You know, we need to really look at what their purpose is in terms of trying to bring inflation down, in terms of trying to get money supply under control, trying to get rates to a point where, you know, everything that they've been talking about for the last few years, and now all of a sudden with the change of administration, I think that all has come to a, I wouldn't say to a halt, but I think there's a lot of question marks.
Well, Dan, there's the last, ever since July, so we're talking 5 to 6 months, it is, if you look at the money supply numbers, it's not just a blip here and there, because I think it's actually kind of difficult for the Fed to, especially with the markets going up the way they are, which creates its own money, by the way, because you create more margin loans and all those kinds of things. It's hard for them to keep a herd on the number. All right? I mean, it's not an easy job. Even if you did, right, even if you did what you and I wanted you to do, maybe just grow it at 3% a year and that's it. Normally, I think it's tough to do. But the last 5 or 6 months, if you look at the numbers, every single month, the increase in the month before, if you multiply it times 12, comes out to 5.1%. So somebody in July or June said, for the rest of the year or for the rest of the lifetime, we're going to start growing this again at 5.1%. It's not like it's up 1 month and down the other and I'm averaging it out. It's exactly even, damn near, at between 5.0 and 5.2.
Right.
So as the chairman, he can't go up in front of a worldwide audience and not know that's what he's doing. And by the way, if that is what somebody's doing, that your fight against inflation is now over, buddy. And matter of fact, you're probably inflating again a little bit. He has to know that. But no, this is not a random event. Somebody is making that call. I don't think it's Trump yet. I don't think it's Biden. Who the hell is it?
Yeah, it's a good point. It is, I would say, if it is anybody, I would say that there's probably more to the plan, if you will, than, you know, the two-pronged approach that he's saying, you know, that he's been discussing. I do think there's more, you know, let's say we all have a little less certainty after the discussion yesterday, because it wasn't consistent with what we expected. And yeah, so there is, I hear you and I agree with you. I think there is a, you know, a higher being, if you will, or there's probably something more that we're not aware of that's part of their mandate that is not being discussed. Or at least that leaves us with the, you know, it leaves us with some uncertainty about that. And I think that's where the market is confused right now.
Well, do you think?
And also, just hearing so many different, you know, what ifs and just so much speculation on, you know, promises that were made in the campaign that, you know, and you know, a lot of stuff that is not lining up. And that level of, I think that just continues to add uncertainty to it. One thing I do believe, Chief, though, that I do think it is a very real issue, and we've talked about this, what seeing the you know the 30-year mortgage rate go from 6% to 7.13, this can happen very quickly, and I think it could happen very quickly after the first of the year.
I just hope that Trump isn't battling.
I think we could see that same kind of rate movement on the longer term rates.
I hope
longer term rates. I think we could see.
When we're on break, why don't you pile in again, because we're hearing like every other word. But I just hope that Trump's not battling a 7.5% 10-year rate this time next year.
It could. I wouldn't rule it out altogether.
Well, that would not be good. Hey, why don't we go to break, and why don't you pile back in
maybe. I'll call back in.
S&P futures up 49, NASDAQ futures up 168. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
I made my bones when you were going out with cheerleaders.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamayo. Greg Pappas on the board. Greg's going to tell us where this is the buying opportunity of a lifetime, the entire bear market was yesterday, or whether this is a dead cat bounce. It's always the concern. S&P futures up 47, NASDAQ futures up 151, Dow futures up 321. Dow has been down 10 days in a row, so maybe we were up yesterday quite a bit before this all happened, but didn't end up that way. I suspect we'll be up today in the Dow. It'll be 10 days down, and 11th day we'll be up, but we will see. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX. These guys are catching up to the sell-off a little bit. DAX up down 170, that's 0.9%. FTSE down 91, 1.1%. CAC around down 77, 1.1%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 268, 0.7%, 38,813. Hang Seng down 112, 0.6%, 19,752. So these guys aren't down that much. Shanghai down 12.4%. We have bonds up 4 basis points, 4.54. The 10-year went straight up after the meeting yesterday. The Bund up 6 basis points, 2.3. That's the highest they've been in a while. Japan unchanged, 1.07. Oil, which has been kind of a nan. We'll ask Greg, but the oil traders have got to be snoozing over there. It's down 2 cents, 70.56. It's between $2.50 and $70 now for a real long time. Brent down 3 cents, 73.36. Natural gas up 12 cents, 3.50. RBOB unchanged, 194. We've got gold, which has been getting clobbered, down again today, 36, 26, 17. It was 2,700 maybe a week ago. Silver down over a buck, 29.70. Again, it's in the territory here where it has been a buy. I don't know that it is this time, but we will, you know, time will tell on that. Foreign exchange, and here's the issue. The euro is down to 104. So it was 107 a few weeks ago. That's 3% moves in currency rocks a lot of boats. I mean, really does. The British pound, 125, make that 126. They haven't gone down as much against the dollar. And now the yen is back up to 157. It got down to 143, I believe. Crypto, bouncing today up 779. Was down like 5,000 yesterday. Still over 100,000, 101,941. And crypto, we love. And here's the bad news. Yesterday, Dow was down 1,100 points, 2.5%. S&P down 178, that's almost 3%. NASDAQ down 716, that's over 3.5%. Haven't seen one of those in quite a while. Greg, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. It is 7:35 here in Chicago. 28 degrees, cloudy and breezy, high of 36 today. Possible snow tonight. Phoenix, right now 49, warm, sunny, and possible record today later, high of 81. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 37 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook, 51 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 38 minutes. Inbound Ryan from 95th is 23 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 31 minutes. NBA, Bulls get the Celtics tonight. That's in Boston. NHL, Kraken at Hawks. And NFL, Broncos at Charger. So the Chargers are favored by 3. That's all I got, guys.
The Chargers got clobbered last week, didn't they?
Well, I can check that out for you.
Isn't there some weirdo thing that the teams that are playing on Saturday this week are the ones that are going to play on Christmas or something?
On Saturday?
No, the two teams, so they get the extra day off.
Oh. Well, I guess that would make sense.
Yeah.
Chargers 8-6. I'm looking at their
There are games on Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the teams that are playing on Saturday get to play on Christmas.
Then the Bears, that good or bad?
I mean, it gives them an extra day off. If you're playing on Wednesday and you played on Sunday, that's a pretty quick turnaround for pro football.
Yeah. Are they?
The Bears are playing Thursday next week.
Right.
Ugh. Why do we keep giving the country a diet of the Bears on national TV?
They didn't know. They didn't know what we know.
They sucked last year.
Yeah, but they thought there was hope.
There's always hope.
No, there's not.
Speaking of hope, is Dan back on?
I believe so.
Dan, you with us?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Sounds better. We're okay. We're talking about hope. So, are you? If you were on TV today, you're saying buy the dip. The bear market was yesterday. You're saying careful here; it might collapse again.
I would say you could buy for. You'd make a little bit today. I think. Yeah, I think we're gonna close up a little. But I don't think we're gonna rebound like we're not gonna make back what we lost yesterday.
What do you think? Tesla down 10%. Wow.
Yeah, Tesla's down quite a bit. Like I said, Lennar was down. Nike was down quite a bit. There were some names that got hit hard yesterday. FedEx, which again is an old story. One other stat, which I'm sure you've mentioned, is the fact that the Dow has been down more than 10 of the past trading sessions. And that is historic in that it has been since the 70s that we've seen this occurrence where it's been down consecutively 10 consecutive sessions or more. And, you know, we're talking about inflation and the concern about inflation coming back. And again, when was the last time that was a big concern? It would be the 70s. So there could be some concern out there. In the part of the market that's not being driven by the speculation of AI or crypto, that is under knows more than what we're seeing. Let's put it that way. That's what's kept the market going for all these decades. So those are just a couple of other observations that again aren't getting recognized, or they're getting like the footprint or the footnote in the they're not getting the headline news. So those are things to pay attention to.
Well, I'd like to get this somewhat back together here, but I'm worried about 101,000 in the crypto.
Yeah.
If that thing ever cracks, there's a lot of wealth there. Or reputed wealth there that people are sort of counting on, and I don't know if anybody. The thing about the crypto, everybody who has one, and it's on up, they'll never sell, and they can't explain to me what they own, which makes me very nervous. I can't explain what they own either. So it's I mean, basically, it's an artificial stock in my mind. I mean, it's
and the same here, and I do think that there we are going to see that get hit here at some point. What probably will happen is once you know we have the new administration in office, and once we see the first few real policy changes, the real efforts made to change whatever the policy happens to be, whether it's particularly related to the financial markets or what impact financial markets is really less important than where the credibility is. And I think the credibility is really what may end up driving the market going forward. Or better still, the credibility is what's going to drop, is where we're going to see a sell-off. And I think in those higher beta names, like the more risky names like crypto, we're going to see a much bigger hit. Because you don't own anything to start with.
Right.
It's not like you're buying real estate and you actually own property. You know, you have tangible property. You don't have anything that you own. So, as much as it's not very exciting, if you want to stay in the market, you know, stay. I would still say stay widespread. You know, stay in a broader index. Don't try to pick a particular part of the market that you think is going to outperform next year. Definitely stay away from long-term bonds. Stay in short-term municipals. We still like corporates on the short end. They're, you know, keep an allocation to gold and silver, although I wouldn't be adding anything big time in here. I think we're going to see the dollar remain strong, you know, with the fact that we're less likely to see more than two cuts next year. I think that's going to be good news for the dollar going forward. You know, I don't think we're going to be entering 2025 with the same level of enthusiasm or upside potential as we did when we entered 2024.
Well, there's a kind of a real, I mean, you and I have been through a couple of these things, and, you know, we went through the 2000, which was a total fiasco if you owned any of those stocks. But somehow or another, the populace, or at least the people you listen to on TV, and that's not really the populace, they equate a stock price with the company itself. I mean,
right.
I mean, if all of a sudden there was some huge correction in Microsoft, instead of trading, well, it was down a bunch yesterday, instead of trading 440, if all of a sudden the valuations changed and interest rates went up and it was trading 280, doesn't affect. It's not like Microsoft is not still going to be around and still going to be producing stuff. They're just valued less. I mean, obviously, if you own it, it's a big deal. If you don't have any protection, right now, the people, Dan, are so happy to be without protection. The people are willing to give money back because they've made more than they did. I don't get that mentality. If I win the money at the blackjack table, it's mine.
Right. Yeah. It's time to leave.
If I can
time to have dinner.
If I can pick it up and leave and not get arrested, it's mine. It's not theirs.
Yeah.
I mean, this idea that somehow we owe the market something back, you know, I don't get. With my clients, I mean, every conversation. That's why you can't give advice on the air, because every person's different, right? So, same thing I'll say to somebody who is never going to work again is not the same conversation you have with somebody who's, you know, throwing $500 a month into their account, right? Where if that person, do you really need to protect them? Probably not. You know, maybe a little bit when the market was, you know, gets extremely high, like I think it has been, but I'd be less likely to protect them today than I was yesterday, right? I mean, plus the VIX. God's sake, the VIX is up to, well, it's down 6 this morning, but it was up to 26 yesterday. Now it's still over 20, 20.8. That's pretty friggin' high. So the price of insurance is going up. I mean, I think all of us would like to see the Trump group shake up some of the things we think were wrong for a long time. But the danger is everybody who voted for him thinks he's focused in on the thing they think he should be.
Right.
That's a mistake.
Yeah, and the order, if you will, of how the policies are handled, or when they're handled, I think it's not only the order of how they're handled, but when they're handled and whether they do become priorities You know, there's always going to be some new issues that the new administration will have to deal with that we're not even thinking about right now. It could be related to the war, something overseas, something that hasn't happened yet. So it's a little hard to I think make those predictions. If you're looking to, you know, as we are, long-term investors, you're looking to make money in the market, you're looking to stay long-term, stay focused on the things that we continue to like, which is, you know, again, where we're going to make money, making sure that what we do have is protected, especially in a market with the level of uncertainty we're going into right now. Think of anything that with the VIX up, I think it's going to continue to we're going to see more uncertainty between now and January 20th.
Well, and I think what I don't want to get confused, you mentioned the metals, and they got trounced yesterday and are down a little bit today as well. But you sort of have to be careful in that when somebody says, you know, and we just said it, both of us, the dollar is very strong. Well, it's very strong against the other currencies.
Right, it's relative.
It's not strong against used cars.
Right.
It's not strong against anything material, right?
Right.
Because the amount of dollars has grown more than the stuff that's material. So there's nobody thinks of it that way. I mean, you and I do, but not many people do. So yeah, is it kicking ass on the euro? Yeah, but that doesn't mean it can't be inflationary.
It's strong relative to other currencies. Yeah. That would probably be the other. But yeah, no, absolutely. It's not something that's not a reason to make an investment. It's just an observation, or it's just a conclusion, if you will, of, you know, lower rates generally mean stronger dollar, but it doesn't necessarily make any particular investment more attractive unless you are in the currency markets. And I would say with a lot of confidence, be careful in the currency markets. They're a very difficult market to predict. It's very difficult to make money in them. The issues that impact them, factors that determine currency rates, are very hard to predict.
If you trade the option, your rate of curvature, how an option will go from like 2 delta to 100 in a second because the volatilities are so low. It's really, if you don't know how to do it, boy, that's a tough thing to trade.
It's tough. Yeah.
Well, so the question of the week, somebody calls up, hey, Dan, here's $1 million. What should I do with it? I'm shoving it at you. What do you do?
I would say that still, I would put it in a broad-based index. I'd put some money in the, you know, SPY. I'd put some money in VTI, Vanguard Total Stock Index. I may put a small amount of money, say 10% in the Qs. And I'd say at least half of it, probably more like 60% of it, I would have protected. So that would be in your strategy, and then also with short, you know, in our strategy of short-term bonds, short-term T-bills, and short-term corporate bonds. So that would be, I would say you'd want 60% of your money in either bonds or in a protected strategy, and then exposure about 40% in the total broad equity market.
Which are the ones that we use, and it's not because I think they're the best, they have the most liquidity, are clearly the Spiders, the Russell, and the Qs, and my brother has a lot of clients, so he's gotten actually very good trading it, in my opinion. We got a lot of people in the XLV.
Yeah.
Which had a pretty good, to explain that a little bit, the SPY is obviously the S&P 500, but there's not, what, now 12, Dan? Because there's 13 now, because two split apart, but like the XLE is all the oil companies that are in the SPY.
Oh, great.
The XLV is the medical companies, and the XLF is all the banking companies, right? I mean, there's a whole list of these things. There's materials and all this stuff, and you got to be careful to make sure that those are. Wait, speaking of one that got trounced yesterday that never moves, is the banking index.
Right.
Yeah, they got clobbered yesterday. And there's one where your volatility is usually very low, so if that moves, it's a big move. But no, we're in kind of, we kind of lean toward the ones that are the most liquid. But right now, in the last 2 weeks, I have had actually substantial money come in. We've been favoring, we did favor, now today's a new day, we were favoring the Russell a little bit versus the Qs. We kind of thought the Qs maybe got away from us a little bit. And Russell has done in the last few months, the people we put money to work, the Russell has been a pretty solid performer. But like I said, today's the new day. Out of those three or four or five, which do you like? I mean, the oil piece seems like it's dead in the water. I mean, I don't know if I'd go on the XLE right now. It just seems like it's not doing anything. I mean, doesn't mean it won't have a great year, of course. But
yeah, I think that probably just based on the lack of confidence in the market, I would stay away from the areas of high, you know, as I've been saying kind of consistently, stay away from the high betas. And that would be like the Russell. Like the Russell probably, you know, is it's done okay recently, and it certainly is lagged. But I don't think there's a reason to put more money into the Russell at this point. Probably would say the same thing with any type of high beta or low, less, you know, any investment with less liquidity in this market. That's where I would stay away.
What do you think about the Qs after yesterday?
There's still going to be an investment because that's still there. It's too soon. It's not enough of a disruption, and it's still too soon. And it's, I think there was like Micron, and there were a few other names that had earnings yesterday that sold off a little more than expected, but that's not going to drag that whole market down. So still have an allocation there. I've been saying all along, trim that allocation, take some of the profits that you've made in it. If you haven't had it, keep that allocation small, like 10% of your total portfolio. I wouldn't add any more than that unless you're, you know, in your 20s and if you're much younger and you have a lot more time. If you're looking at long term, you're looking at where you're going to get consistent returns, and most importantly, where you're going to preserve capital. Keep the Qs to a minimum.
That was actually a couple of people that are recent clients. I was mentioning the kind of same thing to them. I think we got to have our toe in the Qs a little bit, but I would almost rather do it with a, you know, maybe a call spread or something than just buying it. You know, do some kind of a, you know, some smaller call spread where if it goes up this year, we participate, and you know, if it's up, you know, 10% and we make, you know, 8 or something, just be happy with it, type of thing. And because it is, I really don't want to put, you know, 1,000 shares of Qs is $500,000. I just don't want to do that for somebody right now. I mean, it's
yeah. And the other thing I would say to be really careful about, and I'd say this especially to the individuals who are making their own decisions, be very careful about single stock. You know, going all in on a single stock, it's never a good idea because you know stock specific risk is very high. You know, one major issue that you're not thinking about could really disrupt whatever all the positive recommendations are saying out there. So be very careful about that. And in particular, in the tech space, be very careful. Same thing with biotech. You know, you have a single product or a single, you know, have a company that just has a single med or a single product that they're out there pushing. And be very careful because that's where you're going to take the biggest risk. You may think that that's where you have the biggest upside as well, but I would argue with that. The risk-adjusted returns are going to be much stronger with a broad-based index like the Qs.
Well, if you happen to catch the 1 out of 20 stock every decade, yeah, you're better off in the stock, right? If, operative word there being if, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, there are certain years where the active manager outperforms the market. Going into this year, I, you know, put in the letter from the beginning of the year that everything looks really good. It looks like this is going to be a good year for the markets. Everything is lining up really, you know, in a positive way. It's an election year. It's, I mean, the rates are coming down. The Fed's likely to continue to drop rates. Balance sheets are looking better than they ever have. Earnings are looking decent. So everything was lining up at the beginning of the year. So I would say in that kind of environment, it's okay, it's probably best to stay broad-based. As the market gets more choppy and there are concerns, then you want to start looking at specific areas of the market, whether it be a sector that's likely to outperform or a specific name. And in the case of a specific name right now, I would say stay with the larger names. We do a lot of work with small cap companies. We have seen some terrifically managed small cap companies underperform this year just because there has been a lack of interest. I don't think they're going to have a window in 2025 either. It's just their investors are just not, for a number of different reasons, investors are not paying attention to the smaller companies. Liquidity being I think, the biggest reason. And as much as it seems like money keeps pouring into the equity markets, there's still in the back of a lot of investors' heads, I want to make sure I can get out quick, right? So people are thinking, and it's not wrong to think like this. Even for a long-term investor, it's not wrong to think like this. I want to be able to get out quick. And if I'm in a small name or, you know, a small issue, if it's a bond, I want to be very, very careful right now. So there, liquidity is really important going into 2025, and staying with any type of security or investment that's easy to trade makes the most sense in this environment.
But for you and I, and for smart investors, it's one of the reasons why I like using the ETFs. Okay, I mean, we started doing that when they first came on. I mean, but your other firms, not to disparage anybody, they want to take you totally opposite of that. I mean, if you go to name a big firm, I mean, they're going to put you with, you know, big cap Bob and mid cap Mike, and all of a sudden you're going to have 100 positions in your portfolio, because they don't want you to be able to get out.
Right.
We're one of the. You can,
and they buy, I mean, buy recommendations on all the stock. They're putting in all their buy. Yeah.
Well, they just don't want. They want to make it so impossible for you to leave. Now, if somebody called you or me up today and said, "Well, gee, let's how about we give this chief guy, you know, $1 billion? We'll pick 5 or 6 indices. I'd probably be conferred with you. We'd give some money to you if they wanted anything in the fixed income, and I'd have a position you could see on one page, unless there was some stocks we really did like. But it happens rarely for me. And if you want it out, I could be out by noon. Maybe I'd be out by 8 o'clock.
Exactly.
And
we have that advantage.
Yeah. But the thing is, if somebody wants out, we're nice people. We're gonna let them out, right? The other people, oh no, you can't leave. Look at all these stocks. I mean, you're gonna sit there and go, wait a minute, how do I get 48 shares of IBM and 52 shares of McDonald's? What is all this mess? You know. Now, I guess maybe they'll take it out of you if you want to leave, but good luck with that.
Yeah, one of that's also brings up an interesting point related to alternative securities, because we get that question. And it, you know, as the equity market has rallied this year and broken through new highs, you know, 50 some odd times, people are looking for alternatives, and meaning like alternative investments, hedge funds, venture capital, private equity, and private credit. And there's been a lot of talk about that, but in those investments, you're going to have less liquidity. So if you were in a long-only hedge fund, for example, it's going to be much harder to get out of that position than it would if you were in an ETF, or if you were in an account that we were managing. So there's I think part of, again, besides the cost of the alternative investments and the fact you don't need to have been in those to have gotten decent returns this year, there's a concern of liquidity, and I think it's a very well. It's a concern that makes a lot of sense right now.
Yeah, bring back Bernie Madoff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's he. It's a situation of control as well, having control of your positions. But I would, again, I've been preaching this all year, and I'll again say, if you want to be in control of your, if you want to have that sense of control going into 2025, and you do have uncertainty, trim some off the top on those equity positions, put some into, you know, strategy fixed income, which still looks really good for 2025. Put some into your protected strategy, take some of that, preserve it, get some income, because we still will see income in 2025 going forward in both your strategy and in bonds and our strategy. So I still have a high conviction in that recommendation.
Dan, if somebody wants to put the money in fixed income, and I just had a couple clients and we went right to the T-bill auction for about a third of their stuff, which I think, you know, is okay. And we went 90 days, 3 months. What's the kind of the time break even to where I should call you? I mean, if I'm going out a year, I'm going to say Dan's probably got something better than T-bill. I mean, where's the breakup? If it's just 6 months, are you going to say just leave it in T-bill, or can you happen to find a bond that's got 6 months left?
Oh yeah, I mean, we have bonds that have 1 month left. We've been buying 1 month 2 month, 3 month, 4 month, 5 month. Yeah, I mean, in fact, we have a number of bonds right now that are 2 month that are yielding 7% that are money good. So if you're, you know, if your time horizon is that short, there is still a lot of paper, as we call it, bonds out there, corporate bonds that are money good that are giving you as much as 7%, which is considerably more than what you'd be getting in
but the and you're not finding the spread and the transaction costs eat up the interest in that short of a period of time.
And you know, so the rest of the answer to your question is it would depend on the size of the position. So if you're talking about a small position, then do the T-bill or even do the bill, BIL or TBIL, which are the ETFs. But if it is a larger position, you know, more than 10,000, then, you know, we can do something with it.
Okay. Now, because I'm, you know, some of the stuff I only land, I mean, this is your bailiwick. That's why I ask you, and that's why you're always on the show. Boy, sometimes I've had people, fortunately, not recently, you know, because I'm our municipal securities registered guy, but we've had people dump like TIF bonds and stuff. Man, oh man, I couldn't get rid of those things to save my life. I mean, I just got some bad ones, or I don't know how to do it, or what?
Yeah, we trade in the institutional platform, so we have a better access to trading those. It's very difficult to trade most bonds on a retail platform because they're taking such a large piece, you know, their cost, and also because there's no inventory, because that particular dealer, you have to have dealers that are willing to take inventory and take positions in these bonds or know the market really well to know where the other side of the trade is. And a lot less common, you know, you need the experience, I think, that I have of having seen both sides of the bond trade.
We had a client years ago that had a bunch of some kind of Philadelphia tax preferred area bonds, and I resisted the instinct to say, where the hell did you get these things? I didn't say that. But man, they were I think he ended up holding them all the way. I don't think you could ever sell them anywhere. It was like 40 bid at 90 or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, with municipal bonds, that can be the case, and they can be, you can look at your portfolio and they could be priced, you know, based on, if depending on how they're priced. Generally they do matrix pricing, they call it, but if the last trade was at 40, that's where they're going to be showing, even though they should be showing at 90. It's just based on the fact that it's not, for that particular issue, there isn't a lot of there hasn't been a lot of activity in trading. However, if push comes to shove and you have to put it in the market, we're very good at that. I mean, that's the advantage of having us as an institutional manager.
Right, Dan, we might grab you Monday or Tuesday. I think if we might be missing a couple, but other than that, we'll talk to you next Thursday and have a Merry Christmas, buddy. Stay in Florida.
I'm actually going to be on the road. I wanted to tell you, I was hearing I have basically the same story as Lou, that I am going to be on the road on Thursday early. If you need me Monday, I'll be around, and Friday.
Maybe I'll see if John Flanagan wants to trade or something Monday for Thursday. I'll talk to you.
But have a Merry Christmas.
You too. SP Futures up 37 now, and we're leaking a little bit. NASDAQ's down 111. We're still up, but not as up as much as we were. Hopefully we'll stay up. We don't want to repeat it yesterday. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.